we found importance in trying to address things that men didn't want to talk about or even go see doctors about. It's like a closed, safe space for me when it's me and the patient in the room, and I find a lot of satisfaction with that.
For me, I think it's a really unique opportunity because guys, they don't want to come in to talk about their heart. They don't want to talk about being obese. They don't want to talk about having diabetes, and they don't go see a doctor. But sexual medicine, sexual health is health, as we all know.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, by coming to see us because their penis doesn't work, because we know that's really the reason why they're going to come in. They're never going to see a doctor for any other reason, is a great opportunity to really set the, you know, set a goal and find ways to help them and improve their overall health.
This is the Man Up Podcast, a doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask. We have the answers. This week, our episode is titled Q&A with the Man Up Boys. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, we changed things up a little bit this week, didn't we?
Yeah, you know, we're going back. We recorded this a while back when we were at the SMSNA conference. We had already showed you guys some of these clips, but we felt like it was time to change it up. You know, we always do interviews, interviewing
we're
a lot of other
the
people.
Questions, right? Yeah, we're asking the questions, but you know, sometimes we got some answers to give. You know, sometimes.
Yes. So we were lucky. We invited Rainey Horowitz to join us on this episode. So Rainey is a fourth year medical student who actually is applying to urology. She just recently matched at Emory for urology residency.
Fantastic.
So huge congratulations to her.
Huge.
So, you know, she's very passionate about sexual medicine education, and she's part of several SMSNA committees, including the one for social media that I am the committee chair of. Kevin's also in the committee. And she also really runs a exceptional Instagram account at sexplains.md. She focuses on sexual medicine education on it, and she's got quite a following for a good reason, because she really does a really wonderful job of destigmatizing these kinds of sexual medicine questions and conversations.
Yeah, so, it's one of the best accounts out there. You know, I highly recommend our listeners to kind of follow it. You're going to learn a lot, you know, from that account.
For sure. And I think it's just one of those things where we, you know, we really love her work. She's really great. So we wanted to have her on and kind of ask us some questions for a change. And, you know, we talk a little bit about medicine, about residency, recommendations for people who are interested in sexual medicine. We also talk about some general things about sexual medicine, you know, what it's like for us as sexual medicine doctors. So, you know, you might get a little bit more insight to us and a little bit of our thoughts and kind of backgrounds of why we made this podcast. So I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of fun. I think it's something that we'll kind of introduce, a few more episodes in the future. But yeah, sometimes it's, you know, the tables get turned a little bit and we're on the other side and we answer some questions. But you know, I think Justin, me and you, we're really passionate about what we do, you know, and, you know, when we were there in Miami, you know, at the sexual medicine conference, it's so exciting to be around, you know, people who, you know, want to kind of advocate and do the same change for their patients. And so, you know, I think it's nice that we got to kind of share a little bit about ourselves and why we're so into it. So, and plus, I was hanging out with you in person. That's always a plus.
Yeah, that's, I think you're lying, but yeah, that's okay. Yes, I agree. It's always good to hang out in person. I don't know if we'll be seeing each other in person for a minute.
Yeah. Well, you're off. You're off when this airs. You're gonna be
in Milan,
in Europe.
Yeah, I'll be in Italy. I'm giving a talk at the EAU, the European Urology Association. So I'll be in Milan. So I'm pretty
pumped
about that.
I think it's EAU, European Association. Wait, is it? Was it? No, it's EAU.
Did I say that?
EUA.
I said EAU. It's EAU. Yeah, it's EAU.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, it's EAU. I'm looking at it. Oh. Which one did I say?
I don't know. I don't remember now.
Okay. Anyway, I'll be in Milan, so that'll be awesome. I'm pretty pumped about it. But yeah, I think let's get into this episode. Hopefully you guys, our listeners, nice change of pace. Learn a little bit about us, our thought process behind this, and a little bit more about sexual medicine and our approach towards it. So let's do it, Kev.
All right, so we're live here from the Sexual Medicine Society of North America. This is a little different kind of format that we're doing. We're doing it live. This is our first time doing it. And I think we're pretty excited, right, Justin?
This is really fun. We have a really great guest with us to get this going. And the conference has been really fun so far. I mean, but we have a couple more days left, so I'm really excited. Good to see a lot of people here that we haven't seen in a minute.
Just for our listeners who maybe missed our last one, this conference is basically where, you know, a lot of the, you know, the big thought leaders in sexual medicine kind of come together and kind of, you know, share their perspectives, share their stories, and, you know, so they can provide the best care for their patients. But today we are very, very lucky to be joined by a superstar fourth year medical student, Rani Horowitz, who's, you know, we're going to change the format up a little bit. She's going to actually interview us. To talk about a few things.
Yeah, so Rani, introduce yourself to everyone.
Absolutely. My name is Rani Horowitz, and I am a fourth-year medical student. I'm currently applying in the urology match cycle, so fingers crossed, but I've been a sexual medicine advocate for the last couple years, had some exciting research projects, and been fortunate enough to have this be my second time at SMSNA, and so great to connect with new and old friends and get to hang out with these guys in person.
Yeah, she's really a rock star. She does some really awesome work. And we're happy to have her here. And I think she's going to be an amazing urologist and sexual medicine specialist in the future. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, so let's get into it. So what questions do you have for us here?
Well, gentlemen, I think.
We're on the other side now, huh?
I know. How does it feel?
I don't like it.
How does it feel to be in the hot seat? So I'm going to start off with first, for both of you, what does it mean for both of you to be sexual medicine doctors in men's health specifically?
Well, you know, I think it kind of goes back to when Justin and I first kind of started getting ideas to start this podcast. You know, we found importance in trying to address things that men didn't want to talk about or even go see doctors about. And so for me, I find a lot of gratitude and appreciation in that I'm trying to help an area where guys may feel it may be stigmatized or just that there's, you know, they don't want to reach out and have treatment options. So. You know, it's like a closed, safe space for me when it's me and the patient in the room, and I find a lot of satisfaction with that.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent point, and that's obviously one of the reasons why we're doing this. For me, I think it's a really unique opportunity because guys, they don't want to come in to talk about their heart. They don't want to talk about being obese. They don't want to talk about having diabetes, and they don't go see a doctor. But sexual medicine, sexual health is health, as we all know.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, by coming to see us because their penis doesn't work, because we know that's really the reason why they're going to come in, they're never going to see a doctor for any other reason, is a great opportunity to really set a goal and find ways to help them and improve their overall health. The other thing with sexual medicine too is, you know, it's two-way street. You know, most people are having sex with someone else, and if their sexual health isn't optimized, then their partner also isn't being satisfied either. Or maybe they are. I mean, Rani has given a lot of people a lot of tips and tricks on how to do that.
Yeah.
And we will have episodes discussing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're actually potentially helping two people. So it's really cool in that regards too.
Absolutely. I think you guys really did a great job of highlighting the quality of life stuff that comes with sexual medicine and what makes it such a special and amazing field. But truly, like, one of the biggest obstacles for people working in sexual medicine is getting patients to talk about these really stigmatized and taboo topics that are really intimate and really personal for a lot of people. And so what advice do you have for men who might be hesitant to, you know, come to you guys to talk about these issues?
Yeah, listen, one of these things, it's a big stigma, right? Like, a lot of people identify their masculinity with their ability to perform in the bedroom, their ability to, like, lift weights, go do energetic things, to, you know, have a kid, and because of that, they don't want to tell their friends, they don't want to tell their family, they're embarrassed to talk about it with their partners. So, you know, we get it, and that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, because we want to normalize these conversations. But at the end of the day, and Kevin knows this, you know this, everyone has these problems, but we can't help you unless you talk about them, right? Like, if you're sitting home miserable because your penis doesn't work, or you feel like crap because you maybe have low testosterone, or you're having fertility problems, and you're just sitting at home being miserable, you're gonna keep being miserable. The great thing is that we have a lot of ways that we can help you and help your partner potentially, but you gotta talk about it. So you should feel okay. It's a safe space, and we're here to help you.
You know, I'm gonna go a little deep on this.
Let's do it.
So, you know, yeah, I think, you know, and Justin kind of knows a little background, you know, this, you know, and when I say life is short, life is short. We had some things, you know, from a dear friend of ours in the past couple days that we found out about. But
yeah.
So life is short, right? And so if you're a guy and you're just waiting there and basically saying like, well, you know, it's not, you know, I'll get help on it later. Look, we're here for a finite amount of time and we should try to make the best and try to do the best in the time that we have.
Right.
And so, you know, health is one of them. Health, you know, having good health, sexual health, you know, will provide for a better life experience. That's something that we've seen. And, you know, it's something that can be, you know, if it's addressed early on, you have that many more years to enjoy it. So my advice is just go talk to the doctor. Just go seek help. If you need it, just go do it. There's no shame in it. There's no harm in it. And you got guys and girls like us on the other side that are going to be there to help you out. So
completely not judgmental either. I mean, we see it every day, you know, so yeah, I agree 100%.
Well, you guys heard it here first. They just gave you permission to come into the office and talk about your most personal issues. They're begging. You know, you just mentioned testosterone, and it kind of comes to mind, you know, with the introduction of some of these direct-to-consumer products, and it seems like more and more younger guys are taking Cialis and Viagra, and at least they're having a lot easier access getting those things. And so, do you think taking these meds as a young person is good? Is it bad? You know, what are some dangers or considerations we should have?
Well, you know, first off, you know, I think these direct-to-consumer companies, there's positives to them.
Absolutely.
There's positives.
100%.
I think a lot of what we're doing here is basically trying to normalize it. And I think that's one of the things they're trying to do, too. You know, a lot of patients don't want to go into the office to, you know, get the care that they need. And so this kind of provides a little bit more of a comfort zone for them. That's it. This is my perspective. Look, medicines are medicines. Cialis and Viagra, as much as sometimes I feel like I prescribe them like they're vitamins, they aren't.
Put them in the water.
But, you know, they're, you know, it's, you know, as long as when you're taking it, you understand the risks and benefits of any medication that you're taking. I think that's it. And you know what? We're starting to see more and more younger people. I mean, for Justin and I think we've seen patients, especially if they're trying to conceive and all that stuff. We've talked about on a previous episode, you could, you know, develop erectile dysfunction. It's more of a situation, erectile dysfunction. And in those cases, we really say like, hey, look, you know, take a Cialis, take the Viagra. It would help out in that situation. Justin, what do you think?
I think overall, you know, the DTC companies here have done us actually kind of have helped a lot, because I have, in a weird way, seen a lot more guys, younger guys who had these issues who are taking it. And they'll tell me, like, this is not even as a doctor. Sometimes I'm just, like, walking down the street, you know, some guy, like, is like, oh, you're a urologist. I take this. Yeah, you know.
Time to overshare.
Right, yeah. It's amazing. You'll see.
I can't
People
wait.
Overshare. I know way too much about almost, like, strangers. But
it's a perk of the field.
It's too
great.
Much.
It's great. But, no, I think for a lot of guys, I think these direct-to-consumers are great, and they provide a service that's discretionary, you know, and you know, you're being, privacy is key, and that's one of the reasons why we've had issues of people talking about it. But also, you know, I think that it's not the solution for everyone, and
right.
You know, and that's the real key. Like, you know, that's kind of what you were alluding to, is that there's a lot of levels to erectile dysfunction and sexual health that sometimes a pill may cover them up, and it may not be the solution. So I think that if you are getting these products, you can go through direct to consumer, that's fine. But I think that somewhere down the line, you should actually see a sexual medicine doctor, because, you know, why are these things happening? You know, we can, it's a rubber band.
I love that, Justin, because the evaluation for a young guy that comes in with ED is not, well, yeah, let's just give you Cialis and you're out the door. No,
right.
There's so much more to it. You're exactly right. Maybe you have low testosterone. Why do you have low testosterone?
Right.
That's not good in someone that's young. And so there's further workup that will help, you know, best find the treatment option that's best for the patient. Also, you know, sex is a biopsychosocial, right?
100%.
You're big on that model, right?
I love it.
Yeah. It's, and so it's not just, you know, like you said, the medication may be just masking something else that may need to be addressed, not with medication. Yeah. So,
and you know, there's roles for psychiatrists, sex therapists. There's so many levels to it that, you know, yeah, this medication can help you. There's minimal risks. But there may be something else going on that's worth talking about your doctor.
Amazing. Great feedback. So we just talked about, you know, the PDE5s and following up on these young men and their health. You know, people are getting more and more interested in testosterone supplementation because people want to keep their muscles, they want to keep their energy. And I think there's not a ton of just like mainstream discussion about dangers and considerations in that regard. What do you guys think about that?
That's a great question, Rainey.
Yeah.
Testosterone's, it's a, it's, you know, when you see it on the news, mostly it's associated with athletes. They're like, oh yeah, the athletes take testosterone, or bodybuilders.
Right.
But, you know, what you'll find is that, you know, there's actually a lot more recreational testosterone use out there. And I think a lot of men don't understand that there are risks associated with it. Justin and I are, you know, the terminology is andrology trained, but andrology means we take care of men's health, take care of sexual medicine, as well as male infertility.
Yes.
And so since these are all tied together, what we really see is that, you know, when you take testosterone, you could be putting some really bad effects on your sperm count, and as a result, your ability to conceive. And so, you know, in my experience, and Justin's experience, I'm sure, we've seen a lot of patients come in. They're looking great. I'm not gonna lie, they're looking great.
Their shirt looks good.
They're yoked. But they're like, I can't, been trying for 2 years and can't have a child.
Yeah, you're right. I literally saw a patient last week. You know, these young guys, they're going on testosterone, and the problem is a lot of the times they're being given it at a place that's kind of like a random spot, or getting it online, like through some back forum or something.
Yep.
And no one's talking, everyone's talking about the benefits. You're gonna get jacked, you're gonna lose weight, you're gonna feel energy, your erections are gonna be great, your libido is gonna be awesome. I mean, that's true. But for these younger guys, you know, first off, like, no one's telling them that you are probably gonna lose your sperm count and potentially your fertility. I saw a guy last week, young guy, he's been on testosterone for 3 years. No one told him his sperm count was going to drop.
Oh, yeah.
And so now he's trying to have a kid. And Kevin knows that, you know, a lot of the times you do get your sperm back, but sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
And it can take a long time. And if the clock is ticking, it could be problematic. So, and then, you know, there are other controversies with cardiovascular risk, stroke, you know, but, and I think that, you know, the key for these things is that you have someone properly monitoring it. You know, even if you're a young guy, you're interested in testosterone, go talk to a doctor about it before you're on it. Or even if you did it through some other means, go talk to a doctor that manages it to at least help you manage it in a way that is appropriate for you. Because even these guys who have been on testosterone for years, you take them off, they might permanently need to be on testosterone. And that's something else. It's like, oh, you know, I'm gonna do it for a year, I'll be great. Dude, your testicles stop working and they're not making testosterone anymore. You need to be on testosterone permanently. So there's a lot of considerations. And in the short term, a lot of people want those benefits, but they're not looking in the long term, especially when you're young. So there's a lot of things to think about in that regard.
It sounds pretty nuanced. I mean, it really sounds like it shouldn't be self-managed for sure. And with hopefully a growing presence of sexual medicine specialists, and especially people who are like andrology trained, we can ideally get people away from some of those more sketchy places where they might
it's
be
fantastic
getting
point.
The hormones.
Fantastic.
So we're at SMSNA, it's the sexual medicine conference. Everyone's all jazzed about sexual medicine, and that's what we're talking about. And so just to kind of get an idea about what you guys think the future of the field would look like, I'm very curious what your thoughts are.
That's a good question.
Yeah, well, we're first off, we're looking at one.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, we are looking at
the field.
Right here, yeah.
So,
stop. Oh, stop.
That's the answer right there.
You guys are too nice.
I think it's very interesting because we're in an interesting time right now where there's a lot of stuff that is focusing on this idea of biohacking. I think that's like one of the key words that I keep reading about, I keep seeing online. People are trying to find ways to maximize their experience, or a lot of the times they use the word optimization. The problem with optimization is we don't really have data on a lot of things of what the optimized level is, and it's individualized for each person.
Right.
And I think we are going to be at a point where individualized care, you know, we have Whoops, we have, you know, Apple Watches telling us all of these different facts and data about ourselves, that we're going to try to find ways to use that data or find new things to monitor in that regards. And I think personalized care in that way is going to be the future. And it's going to go with sex med. You've seen some devices. You've seen some devices that do some really cool monitoring of your erections. Probably there's going to be a testosterone one soon enough. So this level of, you know, incorporating this idea of biohacking and the technology of our own selves is going to be in the future. The problem with this is that I see is that currently a lot of the data that is being applied to this biohacking idea is not based off of human studies. Okay.
I see.
A lot of it is, I think, is like mice studies or other animals.
I'm fine with that.
Exactly. But that's the truth, right?
I'm a mouse.
Yeah.
Humans are mice.
Yeah. But so it's one of those things, like, I, you know, a lot of times you can't say it's wrong, you can't say it's right. We don't have the data, but are you willing to put your health on the line if you're a fairly healthy guy to potentially maximize yourself where we don't really know what that means? And I don't know. What are your thoughts, Ken?
Well, no, I agree with you that personalized medicine is probably where we're headed on all fronts. So I agree. We have so many data points. We can probably do some great stuff with all the data. We just don't know how to get through all that noise. But that's another topic. The thing that you put on at the end, you know, where you talked about, you know, good data. I think that's one of the things that we've talked about before.
Yes.
You know, it's hard to actually find research that has good data. And so, you know, that's why these conferences are nice, because we kind of come in and we kind of take a look and see what everything's being published, where things are headed. For me, you know, I've done a little bit more work in the restorative therapy area. And so, look, I'm not saying I think this is the answer for it, but, you know, when we look back probably about 20 years ago, I think it was 20 years ago when Viagra, sort of 1990s.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So that was supposed to be the, you know, there's no more sexual medicine after that. We had the pill, that's it, everyone is cured.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that's not the case, right? We still are here, you know, at a time where, you know, there's still kind of the same treatment options, and we're not really fixing the core problem. So at the end of the day, I think there's still a lot in this field, and which makes me excited of where we could go. And so restorative therapies is one of them. I think more research, more data to fully support it. When I say restorative therapies, it means like shockwave therapy, PRP, stem cells, and I'm sure these are what you listeners hear on the radio. I hear on the radio too.
Yes, I hear it too.
It's like, yo, 100 shocks. Your dick is back, you know, and that's, you know, I think, you know, it's our job as sexual medicine doctors to get data, good data, so we can offer the best for our listeners. So, but I think that's where, you know, portion of the future is going to be.
100%. I think that's a great point. And we're going to have Tom on to discuss that.
Yes,
or,
exactly.
I don't know which episode is going to come
at
on
some
first,
point,
but
he's gonna come
we're
on.
Going to talk about all those things too, and the data behind them. So that would be a great
yeah,
episode.
Yeah. Restorative therapies are really a big talk at this conference.
Yeah.
I heard some really good talks this morning about ways that they can be used for women too. And so there's lots of just really cool energy around that space right now. I'm obviously a little biased. I love sexual medicine. It was a big part of the reason that I chose to go into medical school.
What got you into it? Can we ask you?
Absolutely. So
turn in the chair.
Yeah. I told you I don't like being asked questions.
I had to ask a question.
Here we go. Yeah. So when I was 18, I was very privileged to go to a pretty progressive high school that had a bioethics class.
That's cool.
And I was exposed to all of these kind of controversies in medicine that I realized that no one was really talking about. And I grew up in a family, my father's a podiatrist, so I watched him operate growing up, and I like tactile skills, I like embroidering and stuff, so surgery always sounded cool. But this bioethics class is really what kind of got me interested in the idea of studying sex and medicine at the same time, and just kind of looking at that crossover. And so I actually did a lot of research in history and philosophy of science and the way that it relates to sexual medicine.
Very cool.
In undergrad, which was, it was much more like history related.
Wow.
But it's actually what kind of drove me to decide to apply to medical school. And then upon entering medical school, of course, I was like, I'm going to be an OB-GYN. I'm going to save all the women. Yeah. And then I rotated on urology and was like, turns out I like men. turns out, and especially like the fun old ones who laugh at all my jokes. Yeah. And so I really just didn't want to eliminate like an entire patient population by limiting myself to one gender. Gender affirming care is also something that became more interesting to me as I aged through the process. And I really am comfortable talking about things that make people uncomfortable, I think.
And that's important. We need people doing exactly that. And it's a great story, and it makes a lot of sense. I love the history aspect. I'm a big medical history fan.
Oh, so good to know.
It's really cool.
That's all he talks about.
I love reading medical history.
Because we did some freaky stuff to people in the last 200 years, let me tell you.
Someone could be looking at us now and be like, those guys are doing freaky stuff.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're 100% right. And that's the magic of what we do, especially like sexual medicine. We can really, you know, I guess it's kind of funny, think outside the box, like if you're thinking about men's health, but never mind. But
I'm kind of weird. Like I came to SMSNA last year and I was like, I'm going to meet these mentors because I saw them on social media and built up this social media presence that also kind of drove my interest in sexual medicine. And the validation that I got from urologists, especially on social media, was really what kind of gave me the confidence to apply into urology.
Awesome.
And that mentorship aspect is so, so huge. And so, you know, I'm wondering, I'm kind of weird. I did this a lot of this independently. It was very lonely. I didn't have a ton of mentorship at my home institution. Do you guys have any tips for like medical students or residents or other trainees who want to get into sexual medicine and don't have anyone at their home program to latch on to? Like, how can they get started in this?
Great question.
Well, I think, you know, the current time period that we're in is just fabulous, especially with what social media, which I'll let Justin kind of touch base a little bit on it more. But, you know, I feel like you have so many access points and everyone's just so much more accessible now that, like, you know, just, you know, email addresses are easy to find or, you know, Twitter handles. It's just you're not limited to your local area anymore. You can just reach out to someone, get on top of a project and, you know. You know, I feel like it's pretty easy to get involved, but I'll let Justin kind of take it.
Yeah, no, I think it's really exactly what you said. I don't know about you because it's a different experience now, but Kevin can relate to this like 5-10 years ago. It was a struggle to find an email address.
Oh, so hard.
And if you found it, you would be sitting there and you would send the email. You would wait a day, 2 days, a week. Maybe never get back.
Still waiting, right?
Still waiting.
10 years later.
I have like five names. I remember. I never forget.
Yeah, but,
we're watching you.
But now you can go on social media. You can get their emails. Like people respond to on Twitter or Instagram way faster than an email.
It's especially just in sexual medicine.
100%.
Like people are very eager to help, which is so cool. Yeah. That's such a great part about this field.
And that's the other thing, right? Like, so people are very receptive in this field. I think they're very, very passionate. They love to talk about these things. And most of these guys and girls have a lot of really interesting ideas that they're always willing to, you know, work with younger people. Mm-hmm. So one thing that you shouldn't be afraid of is like approaching someone. Because I think more than ever, the community is more approachable. You know, everyone's pretty open. Everyone likes having someone reach out who's interested, because if you show interest, then we're going to return our interest with you, and it's a win-win for everyone. And there's really wonderful young people out there, the older people out there, there's a lot of people
in our
community.
It's a wide spectrum.
But there's a lot of people in our community who just want to help people. So all you have to do is it's like almost like the same as like the patients, right? Like we can't help you, we can't give you advice or tips unless you reach out. So it's literally the same thing. It's like all you have to do is just reach out or
take a leap of faith.
I think also something that you've done really well, Rainey, that I think should be highlighted for students and stuff, that look, sexual medicine and treating sexual medicine is not just limited to us.
That's a great point.
Who have finished training. It's not like, oh, I've had to wait all this time. Look, sexual medicine is education. Sexual medicine is, you know, getting the information out there. So advising, you can participate. You can participate in research. There's a lot of things you can do, and Rennie's done, I think, a great job with that. So.
Wow, you guys are awesome. I feel so flattered. That's all I got for questions for you guys.
That was great, though.
That was awesome. That was really fun. I guess
on.
I will wrap it up now. Yep. So thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, please follow us on all of our podcasting applications. We are on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, at the Man Up Pod. At the Man Up
Pod. At the Man Up Pod. We don't even remember anymore.
I don't remember. We just solidified the moment. Yeah. And then what's our website, Kev?
It's www.themanuppod.com.
Yeah, so we're
good recall. Yeah,
there you go. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, subscribe, comment, give us a review, 5 stars, always appreciate it. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks, Rainey. How can people connect with you, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I am all over the internet and have a very Googleable name, but my Instagram handle is sexplained.med. Twitter is also sexplainedmed, and same with YouTube. So
thanks as always, and until next time, have a good one.